Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Probiotic Planet, Using Life to Manage Life, by Jamie Lorimer, narrated by Jonathan Cowley. Publisher's note, the print and ebook versions of this book include visual content such as figures and tables. Preface. The manuscript of The Probiotic Planet was completed at the end of 2019, and the book was published at the end of 2020. I write this preface in April 2020 in the midst of the global COVID-19 pandemic. The United Kingdom and many other countries are in lockdown. Universities, schools, and most workplaces are closed. Travel and general mobility are tightly restricted, and citizens are social distancing, keeping apart to try to restrict the spread of the disease. The elderly and the already unwell are dying in greater numbers, and a profound economic recession is predicted. A general atmosphere of anxiety, uncertainty, and frustration pervades personal and public discourse. On one level, it is an unfortunate time to be publishing a book that maps and encourages a probiotic enthusiasm for microbes and other forms of life. We are living through an amplification of the modern antibiotic approach to managing life. Hands, surfaces, and volumes of air are awash with antimicrobial chemicals. People are panic-buying personal protective equipment to secure their lungs and bodies, and the pressures for distancing and isolation enact boundaries and territories around bodies, homes, and nations. Resources are dedicated to antiviral drugs and vaccines to accelerate the development of immunity. Such a response is understandable, for COVID-19 is a new and lethal pathogen that we must make time to tame and live with. But as the pandemic hopefully eases and we come to better understand how it emerged and spread, how it was known and experienced, and how such pandemics might be averted in the future, I wager that we might benefit from the types of probiotic thinking and action that are mapped in this book. A probiotic approach involves using life to manage life, intervening in the ecological dynamics of a system to deliver desired functions and services. Often, probiotic approaches use keystone species or species with disproportionate agency relative to their ecological abundance to manage ecosystems. Probiotic enthusiasts tend to stress the importance of biological abundance and diversity for delivering the resilience of their target system, from the body to the farm to the nature reserve, and for transforming it to a desired stable state. COVID-19 is no keystone species. It is a virus, and thus on the margins of the menagerie of forms commonly included in the category of life. As a virus, it is also anomalous in its pathogenicity. There is a myriad of viruses, many of which are undescribed, and only a tiny subset is harmful to humans and animals. An even smaller number have the ability to jump species. COVID-19 certainly needs fighting, but it would be a shame if the necessary push for antiviral control results in an amplified fear of non-human life and collateral damage to ecological diversity and health. Probiotic thinkers advocate what Heather Paxson terms a post-Pasteurian approach to hygiene and the wider management of non-human life. A post-Pasteurian approach requires a nuanced taxonomy of life forms and a more selective armory of control methods than the modern antibiotic or Pasteurian orthodoxy. It retains a vigilant control over specific pathogens, but it also permits the existence of those organisms that restrict the spread of disease and encourages those that deliver desired functions and services. A post-Pasteurian would certainly go after COVID-19, but she would also look at a full range of ecological knowledges and interventions to understand social practices and to enable viral control. Many people in the urban Western world live lives cut off from encounters with unruly organisms. We might garden, keep a pet, or ferment, but we are rarely threatened by the vitality of the non-human world. With the arrival of COVID-19, many have had to learn how to think like a virus, tuning into the threats posed by a highly mobile infectious agent and adjusting everyday regimes to try to exclude it. Engaged publics are learning about the science of contact tracing and its revelations about international, local, and then more intimate domestic movements and infections. Public health officials sketch the viral mobilities enabled by a cough and a sneeze. They encourage us to space ourselves and to choreograph our movements to prevent transmission. We speculate as to how the virus persists on different surfaces and visualize the microscopic landscapes it inhabits. Anxiously, we learn to gauge the temporalities of infection through practices of self-isolation and the experience of illness. As newly forged microbial citizens, Western publics are developing a degree of ecological awareness that is unprecedented since the advent of antibiotics and the successful eradication of infectious disease. And as with other infectious diseases, the ability to dodge the virus and the experience of infection is strongly stratified by socioeconomic status. The virus is laying bare stark inequalities in healthcare, housing, and economic support. It is also becoming clear that there is no single way of thinking like a virus, in the same way as there is no single model of probiotic knowledge. As I write, disagreements abound among expert epidemiologists as to the reproduction rate of the virus and its trajectory. Rifts are emerging between deductive mathematical modelers and inductive public health researchers keen to test empirical realities. On the margins of the scientific establishment, maverick figures are advocating off-label and untested antibiotic solutions that find favor among desperate politicians. COVID-19 exposes the powerful strand of anti-Pasteurian expertise and healthcare that takes issue with mainstream science and medicine. Some populist leaders downplay or deny the etiology and the magnitude of the pandemic to justify business as usual. Alternative experts frame the virus's divine judgment and offer conspiracy theories linking the virus to familiar bogeymen. The internet is awash with retailers peddling alternative cures. In this book, I explore how the uncertainties caused by the absence of non-human life permit rich epistemic diversity. With COVID-19, we see how the uncertainties and insecurities posed by microbial excess open comparable space for denial, doubt, and debate. At the time of writing, the ecological drivers of the emergence of COVID-19 are not fully known. One hypothesis links the disease to wet markets selling live animals in China and a convoluted multi-species transmission pathway from bat to pangolin to pig to human. Comparable zoonotic diseases like SARS and H5N1 have been linked to the hotspots created by industrial livestock agriculture with its concentration of animal bodies, waste, and antimicrobial chemicals. In either case, it is clear that the intensities and accelerated connections of the globalized economy and the globalized food system will have played key roles in this pandemic. In disentangling this pathogenesis of COVID-19, it is likely that probiotic thinkers will point to how the novel, simplified, and unstable ecologies of the food system created the ideal dysbiotic conditions for disease emergence. They will advocate interventions that de-intensify production to introduce a greater deal of ecological diversity, stability, and control. They may well find that the exuberant application of antibiotic chemicals leaves pathogenic legacies as skin, bodies, and domestic ecologies recover in the aftermath of continued chemical scouring. The different ways in which nations and citizens are responding to the pandemic scrambles the political and economic orthodoxy in a fashion much more dramatic than in any of the cases I describe in this book. Many of the core functions of modern economies have been suspended. In a fundamental shift in policy after years of austerity, the UK government is now providing a basic income and housing the homeless. A furloughed workforce is volunteering in large numbers to care for those in need, and citizens appear carefully in public to applaud a newly discovered category of key workers, nurses, carers, supermarket staff, and delivery drivers. This compelling moment of communal solidarity is fragile and conditional. But a crisis precipitated by ecological dysbiosis and non-human vitality is making history in ways inexplicable to humanist models of social theory. It remains to be seen whether this newfound recognition in powerful circles of human vulnerability to non-human life shifts social relationships and the management of the non-human world. Too many microbes are precipitating planetary change, but what new worlds will this pandemic create? Introduction. Life in the Anthropocene. The Antibiotic Anthropocene. In 1983, ecologists working for the Dutch government introduced herds of black-bred cattle and horses into a nature reserve just north of Amsterdam. The animals were left to de-domesticate themselves in the hope that they would restore the naturalistic grazing that had been missing since the rise of modern agriculture. The aim was to simulate the ecological conditions that would have characterized northern Europe at the end of the last ice age, with the cattle and horses standing in for the extinct aurochs and tarpan. The project was promoted as an act of rewildering, and it has inspired a wider movement for rewilding Europe with large herbivores, predators, and other ecologically significant species. In 2004, a British immunologist deliberately infected himself with Necator americanus, a species of human hookworm. He wanted to explore the old friends hypothesis, which proposes that the rise in autoimmune, allergic and inflammatory disease in the West is caused by the absence of some microbes with which humans co-evolved. Having demonstrated that it was safe to host the worms, which remain common in tropical areas, he began a clinical trial to test their therapeutic potential for training and exercising the human immune system. Popular interest in the human microbiome and this eco-immunology has inspired a network of DIY Helminth users who raise, share, sell and host a variety of worms for the purposes of biome restoration. Rewilding and biome restoration are exemplary of a probiotic turn that is underway in the management of life in some parts of the weird, Western-educated, industrialized, rich and democratic world. I use the adjective probiotic in an expansive sense to describe human interventions that use life to manage life, working with biological and geomorphic processes to deliver forms of human, environmental, and even planetary health. Going probiotic goes well beyond a preference for live yogurt. It links a range of efforts that aim to change the composition of biophysical systems to modulate the rhythms and intensities of their ecological interactions. These projects look for tipping points within these ecologies and manage their dynamics so that they stay within desired boundaries. They control, restore, and enhance the functioning of ecosystems to secure a desired set of systemic properties. In these two cases, biodiversity and immunity. This book wagers that this probiotic turn can be detected across a range of ecological scales and science and policy domains that are generally conceived in isolation. Further microscale examples include the wider use of probiotic microbes and biotherapeutic organisms like leeches and maggots, and the adoption of prebiotic diets and lifestyles designed to foster their emergence and survival. It is evidenced in emerging health and hygiene practices that nurture microbial life on the body and in the built environment. These develop targeted approaches that differentiate between good and bad germs and that manage human microbial exposure across the life course. They extend to the long-standing approaches of permaculture, organic farming, and biological pest control. Going probiotic involves the selection and engineering of organisms for bioremediation and waste management, alongside the revived interest in fermentation in food processing. The probiotic interest in rewilding is part of a wider rethinking of the management of biophysical systems, including forms of natural flood management and coastal realignment, localized methods for weather modification, and nature-based planetary-scale schemes for geoengineering through afforestation, ocean seeding, or solar radiation management. Advocates position these probiotic innovations as antidotes to the pathologies caused by modern antibiotic ways of managing life. Like the term probiotic, I use antibiotic in an expansive sense to mean much more than a class of pharmaceuticals that restricts the growth of specific microbes. Being antibiotic describes systematic efforts to secure the human through the control of unruly ecologies. It involves efforts to eradicate, control, rationalize, and simplify life that are common across landscapes, cities, homes, and bodies. It describes the scientific and political developments in the 19th and 20th centuries that led to economic growth, food surpluses, and disease eradication. In going antibiotic, bodies have been purified, cities sanitized, and some natural environments made safe, productive and orderly. Many human lives have been extended and made better, but in recent decades, scientists and citizens have in many cases considered this antibiotic approach to be excessive. Obsessions with purity, division, simplicity, and control lead to blowback and the emergence of new pathologies. Modern modes of managing life and the earth may be disturbing and intensifying natural processes, helping drive the planetary transition into the Anthropocene. Environmentalists were among the first to flag the pathologies of modern natural resource management. They demonstrated how the rationalization of environmental processes like reproduction, grazing, predation, flooding, and fire can undermine the functionality of ecological systems and cause extinctions. Agriculturalists warned that the simplification, standardization, and intensification of modern farming can lead to soil degradation, can cause the death of pollinators, and can create hotspots for disease emergence. Meanwhile, doctors have raised concerns that modern antibiotic drugs, diets, healthcare, and lifestyles are creating widespread dysbiosis in the collection of microscopic organisms that live in, on, and around the human body, known as the human microbiome. Missing microbes might account for recent increases in allergic, inflammatory, and autoimmune diseases. There is great anxiety that the use and abuse of antimicrobial chemicals accelerates the evolution and spread of drug resistance. On a planetary scale, Earth systems scientists caution that the Earth is approaching critical boundaries as a result of the Anthropocene's great acceleration in fossil fuel consumption. These scientists suggest that the planet is close to tipping out of Holocene conditions and moving into a new state that might become pathological to all but the hardiest forms of life. These diagnoses of antibiotic blowback offer a profound critique of modern dreams of mastery and progress. They have been met by denial, obfuscation, and deferment, particularly when they threaten the political economic order and lack simple technological solutions. Subsequent popular responses have tended to fall into two opposing directions. One aims for a techno-optimistic amplification of the status quo. One final effort to achieve our enlightenment destiny as a god species capable of ecological planetary control. Better technology, better government, and more science and reason will save the day through an accelerationist vision of ecological modernization. The other looks backward, promoting a return to idealized pre-modern or paleo pasts. We will be taken back to nature through less technology, less government, and less science and reason. As Bruno Latour observes, seen this way, an otherwise heterogeneous collection of policies and practices consistently array civilization and its futures along a linear development trajectory. We are offered either more of the same or a retreat into history. While these popular 20th century responses to the pathologies of antibiotic ways of managing life certainly inform the probiotic turn, it is also being shaped by more contemporaneous anxieties that call into question some of the certainties of modern and anti-modern environmentalism as well as healthcare. For example, those involved in rewilding must come to terms with how the diagnosis of the Anthropocene undermines the idea of a stable Earth, an Earth that provides the background to human history and is a source of timeless value. Although this argument predates the political event of the Anthropocene, conservationists have come to realize that there really is no longer a nature to which we can return. Similarly, although on a different scale, the figure of the human as an unraveling holobiont, a multi-species chimera that is kept alive, sane and rational by its microbes, unsettles the modern idea of health as the absence of microbes and of the human as a mind in a vat. The probiotic turn is influenced by the more than human intellectual zeitgeist, catalyzed by the Anthropocene and microbiome, which questions these modern ontological reference points and the more of the same or back to nature programs they inform. This zeitgeist is also evidenced in a common challenge made by prominent advocates of going probiotic to reductionist scientific epistemologies that model life as adhering to universal and mechanistic laws on which firm predictions can be made. Probiotic approaches that use life to manage life pull at the binary and linear models of resource management that are founded on them. Probiotic thinking must thus grapple with the contemporary post-epistemological or post-truth condition of a world marked by uncertainty and complexity, the slipperiness of which has compounded a growing distrust in science among some publics and in some parts of politics. The probiotic diagnosis of the false promises of modern ways of managing life, as well as a growing awareness of their inherent pathologies, has weakened the modern settlement between science and politics, and between science and its publics. Here, objective and rational scientists generate knowledge outside of society and in advance of politics. Such knowledge is provided to policymakers who receive it with gratitude and deference, then use it to shape the publics in its image. This has always been a straw man depiction, but the end of nature and the human, as well as the loss of certainty, have led to the proliferation of knowledge claims and controversies, the formulation of new modes of expertise, and the proliferation of novel forums in which publics engage and disengage with science and technology. The probiotic turn is happening at a contemporary juncture in which common anxieties about ecological dependency, dysbiosis, and precarity profoundly challenge modern approaches to health and environmental management, animate a range of eco-modernist and reactionary alternatives, and prompt a far-reaching consideration of the futures of progress, prosperity, and multi-species survival. I do not want to overstate my case. The probiotic turn is not an emic category used by the actors whose stories I report. No one talks of going probiotic in such terms. It is not synchronized across policy domains. Some of these practices are novel, others have longer histories. Nor is it occurring everywhere with the same intensity, it has a geography. Many of these practices are marginal and contested. They also differ in important ways. Nonetheless, in this book, I hope to demonstrate that they represent a coherent and important shift in how life is conceived and managed in parts of the weird world. To be clear from the outset, this book is not a celebration of the triumph of ecological thinking. The probiotic turn is not a panacea for planetary health. No single technological or governmental solution is going to fix the current political and ecological juncture. Nor is there only one way of going probiotic. Instead, in this book, I have two initial aims. The first is to specify the probiotic turn, identifying the common characteristics of probiotic approaches to managing life and providing rich empirical illustration of their practice, history, and variety. The second is to critically analyze the different manifestations of probiotic thought and practice. The probiotic turn has promise, but it requires close critical differentiation. There are many different ways to go probiotic, each of which has different beneficiaries. What does it mean to go probiotic? The probiotic approach to managing life has six general characteristics. These are composed of a common scientific ontology, mode of biopolitics, approach to knowledge production, relational geography, temporality, and political ecology. These are the respective subjects of chapters 2 to 7, and I will summarize them. I focus this exposition on the cases of rewilding and biome restoration with which I opened this chapter, and which are my principal empirical reference points. The probiotic turn is founded on a common scientific conceptual framework in which the world and its constituent parts from a non-linear but nonetheless self-regulating system, or better, a system of nested systems. Borrowing from the work Donna Haraway, Bruno Latour, and Isabel Stengers, I describe this as a Gaian ontology after the influential work of James Lovelock and Lynn Margulis. Probiotic scientists, thinking like Gaia, are preoccupied with evolutionary and ecological relationships, as well as the ways living organisms shape and are shaped by their environments. These scientists think in cycles. They concern themselves with feedback loops with the potential to modulate or amplify ecological change. They focus on questions of symbiosis and symbiogenesis, the reciprocal, co-evolutionary relationships and dependencies between life forms, as well as the ways these configure the structure, intensities, and dynamics of ecologies, climates, and geomorphologies. This science stretches and subverts the neo-Darwinian figure of the bounded human individual, emphasizing both its microbial composition and its planetary entanglements. In my examples, probiotic science is especially concerned with keystone species, that is, the subset of organisms with disproportionate ecological importance resulting from their location within ecological networks. Some species, like wolves, beavers, or earthworms, are capable of configuring entire landscapes through their effects on the food chain or their ecosystem engineering. In the absence of this engineering, or the top-down regulation performed by their ecological interactions, ecologies tip into degraded and dysfunctional conditions. Ecologists and immunologists describe dysbiotic human populations marked by missing microbes and a planet haunted by extinct or diminished keystone species as a result of antibiotic modes of managing life. Research attention focuses on mapping the shape of topology of ecological interaction networks, identifying keystone species and tipping points, then designing and testing experiments to revert ecologies to their desired composition and functionality. Here, the planet and its component systems adhere to multiple stable states, few of which are provident for human life. Gaia is neither vengeful nor beneficent, but rather is agitated and in transition. Humans figure centrally in these novel ecosystems, naturalized as a hyper-keystone species capable of both disaster and remedy. The Gaian ontostery of nested systems shaped by symbiotic relations informs a common set of management practices that are geared toward nurturing and modulating ecological dynamics to secure the delivery of desired ecological functions and services. In Chapter 3, I explain how this approach involves the strategic deployment of keystone species within and beyond human bodies, and targeted interventions to create ecological conditions conducive to their flourishing. These mechanisms range across nested scales, from the nature reserves that are the targets of rewilding to the human bodies that are subject to biome restoration. Probiotic governance is targeted at the conduct of individual humans and animals. It also involves interventions into populations of keystone species. However, the ultimate aim is to transform the dynamics of the ecologies with which they are entangled, working from the bodies of animals out to the planetary concentration and circulation of atmospheric gases. In using life to manage life, probiotic governance differs markedly from the command and control logics of modern antibiotic approaches to human and...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?